Welcome to Headlines. This week, our guest will be Rabbi Chaim Jachter, the Rav of the Beis Din of Elizabeth and a prominent dayan in the RCA. He's also Rav of Shari Ora of Teaneck. He's the Mechaber of four Sfarim and Halacha. He's also the chairperson of the Aguna Prevention and Resolution Committee, a very hot topic. I saw this week it was on the cover of Ami magazine, the Aguna crisis, and he's the Rav. Next week we will have the honor of joining Ashir. We will have it on the radio from Reb Usher Weiss, and he'll be speaking about two fascinating topics: OCD in halacha, basically people with the nervous, OCD, right, or nervous disorders, and also the very controversial kosher switch, and that would be fascinating. Now, it's interesting. If you follow this show since we've been on this program, it's been around 20 weeks, we've had a really fascinating potpourri of Rabbanim, Gedolim, Rosh Hashivas. I don't think you've ever heard anything like it. We've had the entire spectrum, and you know, it's interesting, in last week's parsha, Bilam said, Matovu Ayhalecha Yaakov, and a lot of the great Svarim say, Rashi says, and Matovu Ayhalecha Yaakov, Rashi says that Pischeim Shalzeh, Einam Zekinegedzeh, the openings were not Zekinegedzeh, and some of the great Hasidish Svarim say that it refers to, in Pischuli, Kepischei Shalmacha, Deftach Lachem, Kepischei Shalulam, that everybody has their own way to find Kaviyachal. Everybody has their own opening, their own path, their own shvil, their own mesila to be inspired to serve. And we've certainly had such an interesting, we've had Reb David Cohn, the great Pesach of America from Flatbush. We've had Reb Moshe Heineman. Think of the different cities. We've had Reb Moshe Heineman from Baltimore. We've had Rabbi Neustadt from Detroit. We've had the Dayan of Cleveland. Now we have Reb Usher Weiss from Eretz Yisrael. We're going to have Reb Nissen Kaplan, Rashiva of Demir. We've had Reb Daniel Landa from Turo. We've had Sfardisha Rabbanim, Reb David Shabtai, the big Sfardisha more ethicist. We've had from Lakewood, Rabbi Ari Merberger, Rabbi Yitzhak Grossman, Rabbi Meir Hertz. We've had from Yeshiva University, we've had Reb Herschel Shechta, Rabbi Yaakov, Yehuda David Bleich. We've had from Chabad, Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. And why is that? Because Matovu Ayhalecha Yaakov, Rosh Ein Pischeim Shalzeh, Kenegedzeh. They all are climbing the mountain, different paths up to the top of the mountain, all inspired to go to the top of the mountain. But it's all within the definition of the Shulchan Aruch, but all different paths. And here in this show, as long as you're within the guidelines of the Shulchan Aruch, we embrace you. All these different paths, we're all under one rubric. We've had that good. We've had Rabbi Zwiebel, Rabbi Gottesman, we've had Chabad, we've had Chassidish Rabban, and Rabbi Abraham Twersky. So that's something really unusual, and we celebrate it. We celebrate the diversity and Matovu Ayhalecha Yaakov. But it's something else fascinating. And let me recount to you a story that happened to me many years ago. I remember the year was 1990, and I had just left yeshiva, and I had started working in real estate, and my first job was in Newark, New Jersey, and I had I was managing a building there, and the city, for some reason, in Newark, was very random, and it didn't pick up the garbage. Now, these are big apartment buildings, and the garbage bill could be $10,000 or sometimes $20,000 a month. They bring these huge containers, and they fill them up. And so the building next to me, they picked up. The building on the other side of me, they picked up. And our building, for some reason, they didn't pick up, and it was going to bankrupt the building. So, and we were paying, like everybody else, the same taxes. So I called the city, and they said, look, that's the way it is. Since you may, you know, nayach, there's nothing you can do about it. So I called up a lawyer, and he said, listen, you know, you could sue the city. I said, oh, that's wonderful. How many years would that take? He said, to sue the city, 10 years, and you'll definitely win, but it'll take 10 years. I said, 10 years? We'll be so bankrupt by 10 years. So he says, I'm sorry, I don't have another solution. So I asked around, and I found that one of our brethren works for the sanitation department in Newark. I figured maybe I'd go visit him. There was a fellow, a gentleman by the name of Mike Krieger. So I made an appointment to go visit him. He works for the sanitation department. I come to the sanitation department. in Newark, not exactly, you know, a very Jewish neighborhood. And there's one Jewish fellow working in the entire city of Newark in the sanitation department, Mike Krieger, an older gentleman. He must have been in his mid-60s. This is 1990. Mike, if you're out there, this one's for you. So I say to him, I say, we're talking about my building, what we could do, why are we being picked on, etc. So I say, Mike, what are you doing here? Like, you just, this doesn't seem like an environment, you know? So this old fellow, totally secular Jew, looks at me and he says, I'll tell you my story. He says, it's around 40 years ago. The year is, you know, 1948. He says, I'm finishing law school. And it's post-Holocaust, and, you know, the Jews of Israel are gathering, and the five nations that surround Israel every day, it's the front page of the Times, the Star Ledger. We're coming in, we're marching in, we're going to throw you back into the sea. And he says, even though I'm not a religious person, I was very shook up. We had just lost, you know, the majority of Jews in the world had been killed, and here it was happening, deja vu all over again, like Yogi Berra would say. So he says, you know, I was an excellent student, and law school isn't all that hard for me. So he said, I went ahead, and I rented a little minivan, and I went, and I collected some money, and I started going to gun shows. And everybody knows in the United States, it's very easy to get a gun. For some reason, some people read the Second Amendment as that basically everybody has the right to carry a grenade launcher, an Uzi, and probably keep a tank in your garage. It's definitely what our forefathers meant. So he said, I kept buying guns and guns and guns. I collected money, and I started filling up a container, and I sent a container of guns to Israel, assorted all kinds of old guns, small guns, big guns, with ammunition. Then I sent another container. I sent a few containers of all odds and ends guns, so that kibbutzim, there were kibbutzim that would have three rifles to defend themselves, and two pistols, three rifles, and an old Czech gun from 1927. And he says, I felt that I was doing the most amazing thing. I was preventing entire kibbutzim from being pushed into the ocean. He says, it's a week before graduation, and there's a knock on the dormitory door. I open the door, there's two men in blue suits, blue faces, white shirts with a badge, and they say it's FBI. And they arrested me for gun running. Well, I was guilty. So they pulled me in front of a judge. And the judge looks at me and he says, you know, the last thing we need is another Jewish lawyer. If you agree never to practice in front of the bar, I'm going to let you off with probation. So I accepted the plea, because I was guilty. And I went home, went back, and I said to my parents, I said, you know, that's it. And my parents looked at me and they said, you know, we saved up our whole lives to put you through law school, and we just can't send you to another school again, and you're 25. So I needed a job, so I got a job in the sanitation department. He says, that was some 40-odd years ago, and that's where I've spent the rest of my life. So this is a person, he was not religious at all, but he dedicated his entire life, and he spent his entire life in the garbage department, sanitation department, because he thought he was doing something that was meaningful and special. And I think that's really holy. And I say, when Bilam said, Lehibit Oven B'Yakev, he meant Mike Krieger. And I think that us as Haredim, we have to often look at people who may not look like us and say also, like Bilam said, like the great anathematizer, but like the Maral says, he looked from the outside. He was able to look with a more cosmic vision, a more generous vision, a less egotistical vision. He wasn't fighting in the scrum. And we're able to sometimes look at other people and say, Loi hibit avin biyakev. Amazing. People do amazing, beautiful things. So that's what this show is all about. So I'm really proud to have such a select and diverse group of brilliant Gainim and Rabbanim and Paiskim. So let's go. I would just like to mention to everybody again, you're listening to us on WMCA 570, Zev Brenner Network, or on WMCA NachumSiegel.com, of course, on the NachumSiegel.com, on the Nachum Siegel Network. I'd also like to say again that this week we're going to do that great raffle again. We want to know which station you're listening to us on, because we're in Edison, we're in Lakewood, we're in many different stations. So if you send us an email at info@headlinesbook.com and tell us which station you listen on, you'll be eligible. You'll be entered into a raffle tonight. We will announce it next week who the winners are to win a $100 gift certificate at your local Sfarim store or bookstore, whichever you prefer, the one that's closest to you. So again, if you send us an email tonight or tomorrow saying, I listen to you on X station, or in this country at X station, send it to info, that's I-N-F-O, at headlinesbook.com. We will enter you into a raffle to win $100 at your favorite book or Sfarim store. Next week, again, we will have Rabbi Usher Weiss speaking on OCD and Halacha and the Kosher Switch. Let's begin our program. Good to have with us Rabbi Chaim Jachter of the Beis Din of Elizabeth. Rabbi Jachter is also a prominent rabbi, a member of the RCA. He's also rabbi of Shari Oira, the Sephardic Congregation of Teaneck. He's also a rebbe at Torah Academy of Bergen County. He's the author of many Sfarim and Halacha, Gray Matter 1, 2, 3, 4. He's an expert Masada Gittin, and he's also chairperson of the Aguna Prevention and Resolution Committee, and I understand the champion of the prenuptial agreements that the RCA is also a champion of as well. Welcome, Rabbi Jachter.
Thank you so much. Great to be on the show.
So let me ask you, Rabbi Jachter, how does one become an expert in Masada Gittin?
Well, it's a long road. One has to learn for smicha, like every other rabbi, and then one has to learn for and beyond the usual yara smicha. They also have to study for yadin yadin. That's many extra years of learning in the yeshiva. This I studied at a program at Yeshiva University, the Yadin Yadin Kollel, where we mastered major sections of Choshen Mishpat and Evana Ezer. And then after finishing the Yadin Yadin Kollel, then I was Mishamesh. I observed and watched at least 200 Gittin at amongst 15 different Rabbanim, leading Rabbanim, both here and in Eretz Yisrael. I watched the Rabbanut in Tel Aviv and Yerushalayim. And then, after all that, I was tested by a number of Rabbanim, including Rav Hodiah Schwartz from the leading Dayan here in the United States, one leading Dayan in the United States, and Rav Avadya Yosef and Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg in Israel.
He's referring to the, because in Gittin it's extremely stringent. We know the Gemara says Mandla Yada Bativ Gittin Vikidush Layesik Imoim. It's one of the most complicated set of halachas is Siddur Aget. And interestingly, some say Siddur Kiddushin too. It's a Machalikis, the Machalikis, Machalikik, and the Beis Shmuel and Shulchan Aruch, whether it goes on Kiddushin too. But certainly Gittin is certainly one of the most complicated set of halachas that there are in Shulchan Aruch.
No doubt, and that's why not only do I make sure to have the proper certification, but that's why every year and every summer I devote a considerable time to going starting from the beginning and doing a thorough chazar and review of the halachos, halacha and halacha lamas, practical sfarim as well. So it's something that you have to work very, very hard to make sure that you do, that you know the halachos properly, that you're prepared for emergencies that happen all the time and happen unexpectedly. You have to know how to, so to speak, hit the curveball. And you also have to have a good Rolodex, to use an ancient term. You have to have excellent Rabbanim, leading Kamina Chachamim, Gedolim, Poskim, to be able to consult when a tough issue arrives.
And who would you consider the preeminent, who's the go-to person in the world when there is a difficult shiling get?
The people that I like here in America are three favorite Rabbanim four favorite Rabbanim. Of course, the Av Basin of our Basin is Rav Elazar Meir Teitz. And I ask him, of course, regularly. Rav Gedalia Schwartz from the RCA is outstanding. Rav Mendel Sendorovic is from the Milwaukee Kollel in Miami Basin is also really an outstanding posse, and Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg in Eretz Yisrael is outstanding. There's Shmuel Kershkaman in Atlanta, also outstanding rabbanim in the area of Gittin.
So, is there a mamzeris crisis in America because of all the people who get married and don't get a get kahalacha?
I would say that to call it crisis may be a little bit overstated, but a concern, maybe a problem, yes, because there, unfortunately, there are many Jewish couples who are divorcing and do not receive a get, and that's problematic.
Now, when you say the divorcing, you're talking about conservative, reform, totally secular. Who are you referring to?
So I'm talking about with people not within the Orthodox community, people who when they divorce civilly, they don't make sure to have a get, and unfortunately the gittin that are conducted by conservative rabbis are not recognized outside of the Orthodox community. Are not recognized by the Orthodox community. Not recognized by the state of Israel.
Now,
and it's fortunate that they're not recognized, but it's unfortunate that, from I've seen from my experience, that they are they're not conducted with according to the standards of halacha.
Now, Reb Moshe wrote a very famous shiva, arguably the most. Not that I consider myself an expert in halacha, but if you were to ask me, just as trivial pursuit, the two most biggest, you know, piskei halacha written in the last 50 or 100 years, the first one that would come to mind is the Psak of Reb Moshe, where he says that the marriages conducted by reform or conservative rabbanim don't have a din of marriage. And he bases it, he says, even though there's a concept of Eina Demaisa Bilasa Bilasanus, he says, when they think they're getting married according to law, in that case, there is no kavana, and therefore, you know, he says, even the Marik and the Rivash, etc., he says, but in effect, there is no marriage, and therefore, there is no need for a get, and therefore, he vitiates all the marriages, and there is no necessity for a get. So, post-Reb Moshe's psak, we're assuming we accept it, and I know there are poskim who don't accept it. Where would this, you know, issue of mamzeris apply?
Okay, that's a great question, and let's try to answer all the different pieces as best we can. So first of all, Rav Moshe's psak has become he had precedent. He wasn't the first poskim to say this. The Marsham already says it. It's been seconded by many other great poskim, certainly in cases of mamzerus. I'll give you a list of some of the poskim who agree with it: Rav Avi Yosef, the Tzitzeliezer, Rav Yashiv, and the Lev Ari is a great poskim in England. These are amongst the great poskim who endorsed the Psak, Rav Tzvikas Achrank.
As opposed to, let's say, the Menchas Yitzchak and, you know, a number of others who didn't accept it.
But the consensus actually do agree with Rav Moshe on this case. If I recall correctly, the Minchas Yitzchak will agree with Rav Moshe if there were no observant people in the at the event. Rav Moshe would say, as long as you didn't have two Orthodox observant and Orthodox males, who adult males who watched the Nesinat HaTabas, the delivery of the ring, then you're okay. Even if you had two such Orthodox males who were present at the wedding, he would still say the wedding is not valid. But that the Minchas Yitzchak disagreed. He felt even just presence at the wedding would be at the chuppah would actually would validate the marriage. And that is that's a point that the Minchas Yisrael disagree with Rav Moshe. But in generally speaking, Rav Moshe's stock has been accepted. As I've seen also the Batei Din in Eretz Yisrael, L'maisa, certainly in case of Mamzerus, it's been accepted. But certainly Rav Henkin was most famous for disagreeing with it. But generally speaking, the consensus agrees with Rav Moshe. That's clear. The question is, though, then why am I saying there might be a mamzerus problem, mamzerus crisis? So let's say as follows. Number one, everybody agrees that lechatchila you should try to have a get. Even Rav Moshe writes that you shouldn't rely on his kula if possible. We should all try to make sure that there should be a get, even if the marriage was conducted by a reform, a conservative rabbi, even if the marriage was just a civil ceremony. Rav Moshe still writes that we should still make sure that there should be a get. That's also an important point to clarify. But despite Rav Moshe's tshuva, there are two major demographic changes that are occurring that raise the issue and make mamzerus a little bit more of a concern. More recently than perhaps even 20, 30 years ago. And these are the two reasons. Number one, and generally speaking, this is a very good thing. Many non-observant Jews who previously were affiliated with conservative reform congregations now are moving very often to Chabad congregations. So that's to a Chabad shul. That's wonderful. It's wonderful that they're involved with an Orthodox shul. It's an excellent phenomenon. The only potential downside is that now you have people who are not observant and they receive the benefit of an Orthodox chuppah. So we're moving into a situation where in the United States, which is similar to what you have in countries in the Commonwealth, such as England and South Africa, where you have soon we're going to have a majority of non-observant Jews who are affiliated with an Orthodox congregation, and they have an Orthodox marriage. That's one demographic change. The second demographic change, you have more Sephardic Jews moving to America. Sephardic Jews, even if they're not observant, the synagogue that they will affiliate with is going to be Orthodox, and therefore when they marry, it's going to be Orthodox. A third concern, actually, is the Russian community. You have many Jews Russian Jewish community came from Russian-speaking countries, come to the United States, and very often they'll affiliate with Chabad, where many live in Brooklyn, and in Brooklyn there aren't too many or conservative reform rabbis. So the situation that you have maybe 30 years ago, where most of the, almost all the non-observant Jews would be members of non-Orthodox congregations, that's very much changed this generation, and therefore the need for the community to be alert when they know of somebody who is non-observant, be a coworker, be a relative, and they heard that the non-observant person is divorcing, to make sure that they have a get that is Orthodox.
So here's an ironic question. I mean, if you're a rabbi who's being asked to be Masadar Kedushin between two secular people, should you do it where it's Kalacha or where it's Shalok Kalacha, knowing that they very well may not get a get, and in which case subsequent marriages could be Mamzerim? It presents a very unusual dilemma, no?
Correct. That's very, very much on point. I'll share with you what I heard from Lev Cohen. Got that back when Rav Moshe was a Rav in Russia, parents whose children became communists and were unfortunately not observing the Torah, the parents would see their children would be living with Jewish partners, and they would come to Rav Moshe begging Rav Moshe that he should give Chuppah Kiddushin for the children. And Rav Moshe would say, no, it's not in their best interest to have Chuppah Kiddushin, because let's say if they divorce, they're going to remarry without a get, and you're going to have a problem with mamzerus. So Rav Moshe took a long view, and he felt that it's not in the best interest for Orthodox rabbis to mesader a kiddushin for people who are that far from Judaism. Now, what does that mean in practice? I remember speaking to Rav Moshe's son, Rav Reuven Feinstein. What he felt was that if you have a connection to that non-observant Jew, or as of yet the not yet observant Jew, I'll put it that way, in a more optimistic way, then if you have a connection with them and you'll be involved with their lives and you'll be connected, if you hear that the couple will divorce, then you'll be in a position of educating them about the need to forget, then it would be okay to be Masada Kedushin, since you'll be involved in with their lives. Or that probably would apply if you're the rabbi of the congregation where you serve as their rabbi and they come to you for a kiddush if they're not yet observant. Then presumably you'll still remain in contact with them and you'll know about if they divorce. But people that you don't know them and the couple will come and ask you, non-observant couple will come and ask you for Siddur Kiddushin, then you will have no connection with them after you are being Masada Kiddushin, after you perform the ceremony. Then in such a case, Rav Moshe felt that it's not in the best interest of the couple for them to have an Orthodox Kiddushin.
Now, I'll tell you what's interesting. My father, Zichron Livracha, was a Rav, and he told me that what he would do in such a case is he would, by the ceremony, he would get up and he said, I would ask everybody here to join us as witnesses in this, Kiddushin. And obviously among them, there were brothers and sisters and all kinds of witnesses that were not.
Right.
And therefore you passel the Eidei Kiddushin and there is no,
right.
Join us as witnesses, come together, and this is holy matrimony.
Right. Interesting
way to do it.
Of Yichud Eidim.
Of Yichud, yeah.
There are Rabbanim who do that in Eretz Yisrael, but the Rabbanim that I've had, that I grew up with in Yeshiva, such as Rav Amital from Yeshivat Har Etzion, was not happy with such a ceremony. But there are Rabbanim who do this practice, but it's not something that I'm comfortable with.
So basically, to summarize, you're saying that we have many, people who go to a Chabad Rav or some local Orthodox rabbi and ask them to do, the Kiddushin, and then afterwards they just sort of drift off into wherever they are and never get a get.
That's a problem. It does happen.
And
that's where you could have potential mamzeus issues.
Now, you know the old story, they say let me go back to something you said before. We know that the Chazon Ish's opinion was that all the religious today have a din of a tinnik shenishbo for the most part. He says it in a number of places.
Right.
Wouldn't that be problematic for a Moshe's psak?
Because that's correct.
In other words, if you have Edim, or theoretically, according to the Rambam, you could even have a reform rabbi, according to the Chazon Ish. Right, and he would have a din of a tinnik shenishba if he's multi generational reform based on the Rambam and his Mamrim that says the second or third or fourth generation, they're just following Darkei Avosam. So, according to that Chazon Ish, wouldn't the problem of mamzerus be much more serious, even post Rav Moshe's psak?
Correct. The core of Rav Moshe's psak is Rav Moshe believes that even a tinnik shenishba is pasuleidos if he violates the Torah prohibitions which renders somebody pasuleidos, right? So say a lot sheish b'maisa, a lot that you would get malchus for, which says eating something not kosher, being machal shamas, God forbid. These things render him not kosher according to Rav Moshe, not kosher to be a witness, even if that person is a tinuk shenishba. Now the Chazon Ish might disagree with that. The question is, when the Chazon Ish say that? The Chazon Ish may have said that in the context of Malin B'lo Moridin. The Chazon Ish may have said that only in the context of the mitzvah of Tochacha. We can be a little bit more moderate with the mitzvah of Tochacha for such people. But did the Chazon Ish actually say that such people are Ksheim La'edos? I examine the Chazon Ish pretty carefully. I never saw the Chazon Ish actually say that people who he would regard to be a little bit more, to go easy on them for as far as the mitzvah Tochachar is concerned, I don't think he said that they would actually be ksherim le'edos.
In other words, your point is, you're saying, to say he's a tinnik shenishba, that he's not a Russia, the Chazon Ish says he's not evil, he's not a Russia, but to be an aid, it's not just that you're not a Russia. You have to have a mile of credibility. You have to be
to be a witness means you have to have a mila, you have to have credibility, you
right.
have to have standing.
Right.
So a rashi
right.
you're not, but standing you don't. And certainly a tenet
right.
shenishba who doesn't believe in leisignaiv, leisinaf, etc., how could you bear witness if you don't believe in the statues? That's your point. A rashi's
exactly.
not, but standing he doesn't have, even according to
right.
the Chazanish.
Interesting way to put it.
Can I ask you a social question as a Masadigitin? Do
yes.
you find that the incidence of get in our community is rising on a percentage level over the many years that you've been a Masadigitin, or is it staying the same?
Within the Orthodox community, unfortunately, I think it's rising.
And what would you put that at the feet of?
I put it at the feet of that we live in a time when people tend to be a little more selfish, and we don't have the value of giving, of compromising. The theme of the day is what's in it for me. Be focused on yourself, and everybody's focusing on actualizing oneself. And an ingredient for a successful marriage is compromise, willingness to give, self-sacrifice, not being a self-centered person, and rather being one that's giving, and that's very necessary for marriage. And the values from the outside culture seem to be seeping in to our culture as well, and to our loss.
Okay, let's go back to halacha, Rabbi Jachta, and sadly, we've heard many guests who agree with you, so I don't know any mamzerim. So, as a community, I mean, do they exist, and what happens to them?
That's Akasha. It happens. I know people who actually, and I have situations where I've seen their mamzerim. Now, how do we handle it? It's a good question. I have not met too many people within the Orthodox community who actually would be mamzerim, but people who are from outside the Orthodox community. Now, the question is, these people, God willing, will come to be Balei Tshuva, and then they start looking into their lineage, and they find that there's a problem, and they may not find a posek who will be able to resolve the problem and say that they are Sherem Levo LeKahal, that they are actually not Mamzerim. So it potentially could be for these people, it could be an enormous tragedy. And that's why I very much believe that people should be a Shomer Yisrael. Every Jew, every listener to the show should resolve to be a Shomer Yisrael if they are aware of a non-observant Jew who's divorcing, to make sure they have an Orthodox get. And not just an Orthodox get, it should be a get conducted by a rabbi who has proper credentials and a way to know. The gold standard is the person is recognized by the Israeli chief rabbinate. If they're getting are recognized by the Israeli chief rabbinate, that's a gold standard. You know this person conducts the get in a manner which is consistent with halacha, and that there wouldn't be a problem of mamzerus with children from a subsequent marriage.
You're listening to us on WMCA 570 or WMCA 5, WMCA.com or on the NachumSiegel.com. If you have any questions or comments, email us at questions@headlinesbook.com. We are speaking to Rabbi Chaim Jachter of the Beis Din of Elizabeth, a prominent member of the RCA and also chairperson of the Aguna Prevention and Resolution Committee. Rabbi Jachter, given the number of, sadly, the very high-profile Aguna cases going on in America right now. As we know, there's a very high-profile criminal case going on in New Jersey over a number of clergymen, I'm not sure if I'm using the right word over there, who used rather illegal methods to try to coerce a recalcitrant husband to give a get. So first of all, I have two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't these gittin? I mean, from the little I've learned in Hilchas, Geirish, I learned Hilchas gittin, but the instances when you could be kaifan get, when you could force a get, are really extremely limited. How could it be possible, when the husband didn't even exist, as this famous case in Jersey now, right, where the FBI put up, the stooge of a non-existent husband. How could you paskin kfiya to force a get without any kabbalas edus, without getting any testimony from the other side of the husband's side? I mean, how could you possibly a bezdin come to this psak with such flimsy evidence, and the proof of it is the man didn't even exist? And if so, and they reached such a psak, and it seems they've done it repeatedly, wouldn't those gittin be invalid, and in effect then, the isha, the children of subsequent marriages, be a question of mamzerus?
Okay, you're raising a very, very valid concern, and I wholeheartedly agree with the concern. The only thing is, we say that hava nerda, we have to investigate the case. Every case would have to be investigated. And you could also assume that the Jewish people have responsible rabbanim, or it wouldn't be masada kedushin for a woman in such a case unless they'd investigated with proper poskim to be sure that such a get would be considered to be kasha.
Yeah, but if the husband didn't exist, I mean, how much investigation could have they possibly done?
I understand, but I would hard for me to imagine that misadri kedushin, and I emphasize misadri kedushin, would misadri kedushin for a woman after she received that sort of a get.
Well, anybody, I mean, you can find a misadri kedushin for $1.50 on the corner.
Maybe that was true in previous generations. I have pretty good confidence that within the Orthodox community today, that the rabbinate is a solid rabbinate, and I'd highly doubt that people would be misadar kedushin for such a situation. But actually, sadly, there could be situations. I know of a situation where a woman remarried after receiving a quote-unquote heter from a, let's put it this way, a less than excellent Beit Din back about 15 years ago that was operating under controversial circumstances, very controversial circumstances. A woman remarried. She received permission to remarry without a get. And somehow some rabbi performed a wedding, and she had a child. Unfortunately, we'd have to investigate a little bit more to see what the status of her first marriage was. But basically, you would have at least a serious concern of mamzerus in such a situation. So if the get was conducted improperly, and there is such a concern, and if the woman did find an improper misadar kedushin and did perform the wedding, then indeed there could be a potential problem of mamzerus. Again, I find it hard to believe that there would be Orthodox rabbis that would be misadar kedushin under such circumstances.
So given the issue of agunis, and sadly there's many of them, why has the prenuptial that the RCA has put forth not been more widely accepted by the Orthodox community in America?
Well, at least the Orthodox community that I'm familiar with has accepted it. I'm here in Bergen County. I live in Teaneck. And certainly in Teaneck, all the rabbanim use the prenuptial agreement before their Masada Kedushin. I know in Riverdale, the community nearby, all the rabbanim use it. New Rochelle, I think it's five towns as far as the rabbanim that I'm familiar with, that I'm connected with within the Rabbinical Council of America, do use it. I know that the Beth Din of America reports that there are thousands of downloads of the prenuptial agreement every year from its website. So it is a well-used document. I just should add that my wife and I actually did sign a prenuptial agreement before we were married back in 1995, and whenever I'm a Sada Kedushin, I insist on it. And it just seems to me, at least in certain circles, certainly within circles of people who are affiliated and connected with rabbis who are members of the Rabbinical Council of America, it is very, very popular. Look, the prenuptial agreement has an endorsement from really great rabbanim, Rav Asher Weiss, Zalman Kamiya Goldberg, Rav Avadya Yosef.
By the way, Rav Asher Weiss is our guest next week.
Terrific.
Yeah. My question to you is, what is the hisnagdis to it, the halachic hisnagdis to it? Do you know? I mean, it's based on an asivis, right? It's based on an asivis.
Absolutely.
So,
that's correct.
So
that's
what?
Very good.
What is the hisnagdis to it? Do you have any idea? Or is
no.
it just, it's just in general, it's a change. It's not brought in Shulchan Aruch, really. It's a change of, custom, and therefore any change is just very hard to, bring about.
the Netzivos actually is quoted in the Pisle Tshuva to Shulchan Aruch in Kuflam Adalet and Eben Ezer. So it actually is a little bit of a different form. That's an agreement prior to a get. But just to translate it into terms of prenuptial is not much of a leap, and it's certainly in harmony with halacha, without a doubt. What I heard a comment from one prominent Rosh Yeshiva who made a comment saying that one of his talmidim told him that his father-in-law wants him to sign a prenuptial agreement, and the young man said that the Rosh Yeshiva told him, "Oh, what does your father-in-law think you're a manuvel?" Now, I think that's an unfair question. And I think that comes from somebody who is not experienced in the area of Seder Gittin. People who are Masadri Gittin understand that you need to have a prenuptial agreement for everybody. Everybody should sign the prenuptial agreement, so those few people that need it will have that protection. Give you an example. We already have a concept of a prenuptial agreement, the Ksuba. Ksuba is a prenuptial agreement, and just like everybody signs a prenuptial agreement, doesn't matter who, everybody should sign a prenuptial agreement.
The Gemara says the purpose of a ksuba is shaloyeh kala bein of loitzia. So would the Rosh Yeshiva say that Chazal were menuvalim because they were choishish there would be kala bein of loitzia?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, the Chazal didn't suspect the Chasanim were menuvalim, but they were. But they did suspect that there are 2-3% of husbands who would eventually not act so properly, and therefore 100% of the husbands are required to sign the ksuba. To agree to the ksuba, and this way, all of the women are. And I should add also something about the prenuptial agreement. It's not just to protect women; it's to protect husbands as well, because there are men as well who have a serious problem remarrying because their wives refuse to receive a get. It's very difficult to understand why anybody would be against signing the prenuptial agreement. It has endorsed in such great gedolim. It has, and it empowers Rabbanim. The reason why you didn't have a problem of agunos back in, let's say, in the old country, in Europe or in Sephardic countries, you didn't have this problem. You look through the tshuva literature, you look at all the shals and tshuvos, very, very rare that you have this problem. The main reason was because Rabbanim had authority, and people wouldn't defy Rabbanim. Here in America, people defy Rabbanim. One time, my colleague, Rabbi Eliyahu Teif, and I delivered a hazmana, a summons to a gentleman who was refusing to give a get to his wife. We went to his house, and we delivered a summons for him to come to the basin, and he attacked us with a bat. And I'm not kidding. It's incredible the lack of respect for Rabbanim that some people have. But Rabbanim in the old country, be in the Ashkenazic or Sephardic countries, in the old country, the people had respect for Rabbanim because Rabbanim had authority.
I heard from Rabbi Yaffin from Beis Yosef told me, he had some experience with Balabatim too. He said, the board voted, they came to a rabbi, and they said, the board voted, to a rabbi in the hospital, the board voted 3-2 to wish you a refuah shleima.
Exactly, right, classic joke. And it's true. And the only way that we resolve this is to have the couple, by contract, contractually assign jurisdiction to the basin to resolve any issues regarding agunah. This way, Rabbanim are empowered, like we had in the old country. Once Rabbanim are empowered, the situation is totally different. And that's why, since the prenuptial agreement has been introduced in 1992, there is not one couple, again, there's not one couple who had a proper prenuptial agreement that was executed properly. There's not one who has gotten to the point where they have a civil divorce and they don't have a get as well. In other words, we are batting 1,000.
So what you're saying is that if we would do the prenuptials, if we would make it a part of every kedushin, and if the Rosh Yeshivas and Rabbanim, we would not have articles in the post. We would not have grandchildren of Gedolei Hadoyer plastered over newspapers with acrimonious, embarrassing Chilul Hashem proceedings. We would not have tortured families and lengthy, year-long procedures if we would follow if we would use the prenuptials championed by the RCA.
You're 100% correct. 100% correct. Part of the wrangling that happens in the basin is you have people who are the couples argue about which basin to go, and they can argue for years which basin is going to be a zabla. They can argue about years about the composition of the zabla. The prenuptial agreement sets it straight out. It's a shtar birur, it's a binding arbitration agreement. The couple agree to a specific rav and specific basin, actually, and that's it. It's set forth, and it's actually been enforced in civil court. There's a classic case in November 2012, Light versus Light in Connecticut. The civil court actually upheld the RCA prenuptial agreement. So it's constitutionally valid as well. It stands the test of halakha, stands the test of civil law, lahavdil. And it's a great contribution to the Jewish people.
The Torah tells us that even when we disagree, there's a concept of Elohim lo yisakalel. We don't curse a dayan. And there's the concept when we even when we disagree at our worst moments, there should be an element of dignity, and the time to do it is when we are getting along. Say, let's set in motion the processes so that if God forbid things don't work out, let's already agree now how to do it so that it's done in a dignified way with the least collateral damage. And it doesn't create an explosion that just decades and damage children and families and community and rip apart families. And well, thank you so much, Rabbi Jachter. I've gone through three of your four gray matters. I've used them very much. I thought they were fantastic. And thank you for the wonderful work as the chairperson of the Aguna Prevention. It is certainly one of the most needed and most, pertinent halachic positions in America today. Keep up the wonderful work you do for Klal Yisrael.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rav Lichtenstein. Can I add in one last point?
Yeah, certainly.
The prenuptial agreement is not signed at the wedding day itself. It's signed a few weeks before. So there shouldn't be any discomfort of having to conduct that at the wedding itself. And conducted weeks before, and it's done in a way that everybody can be comfortable with it, and it's endorsed by, as we said, Sephardic Rabbanim, as well as Ashkenazic Rabbanim, and it's something that all Jews should be comfortable using.
Yeah, and certainly, if you have Rabbi Avadya Yosef's Haskam, since the Beis Yosef, there's been a greater Sephardi Jew than the Rabbi Avadya.
You'd be hard pressed
to think of a greater, from the Rambam to the Beis Yosef to Rabbi Avadya. I don't think there were three greater Sephardim. Well, thank you again. I'm sorry. Continue. What were you going to say?
Actually, the prenuptial agreement, the idea in contemporary times, modern times, actually began in Morocco with Rav Massas, who was the great Rav Shaul Massas, the great Moroccan poste.
Yeah.
And so it began with the Sephardim. So it should not only for Ashkenazic Jews, but for Sephardic Jews as well.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Jachter, for joining us.
Well, I'd like to conclude this week with a little thought on the Parsha. This week is the Parsha of Pinchas, and Pinchas is the Kanoi. Now, here's something to think about. There were 2 million Yaitzei Mitzrayim, including 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60. So I have a question for you. How many Kanoim were there then? We only know of one, Pinchas. Well, there's around 1 million Frumma Jews in the world today. How many Kanoim would you say people classify themselves as Kanoim? Well, I know thousands of people, if you would ask them. They're whole movements of Kanoim. So why is it that there was only one Kanoi then, and there are so many thousands today? It's like Achshir Dora. We've become so much greater than the Dora of Yotzei Mitzrayim, the Dora that was Rosh Shivcha Layam, Ashur Yecheskel Bambuzi. We've become so much holier. So here's something interesting. Like Rabbi Yankif Kamenetsky used to say, he says the world has changed. He says Pinchas was Ra Maisa V'Nisker Halacha. He saw something that hurt him and offended him very deeply. V'Nisker Halacha, so Vayikach Reimach B'Yadah, he was so hurt, he ran out with a sword. He said, today there are people running around with swords that are looking for a halacha. It's the other way around. Now, let me tell you a secret. I used to be a Kanoi too. Right?
I remember years ago I was davening in a minyan, and at the end of the minyan, sort of, you know, when they say the Kadeshim, you know, the prayer for the deceased, the last part of the quorum, there was this elderly, distinguished-looking man who used to come in, quickly put on his talus, you know, say that, you know, listen to the Kaddish, say the Amen, take off his tefillin, and leave right away. And the first time it happened, I thought, wow, he's late. Second time again, then I realized he does it every single day. And I said, this is just so disrespectful. I mean, first of all, he's an elder, so people look at him. And, you know, he sets an example for the community. There's children there, there's adults, there's teenagers. He's distinguished looking. So, after I had seen this happen, like, for 2 weeks, I said, you know what? Somebody's got to say something, and I'm going to be that person. I'm going to be the kanoi. So what did I do? The next week, I decided on Monday, I'm going to walk over to this man, and I'm not going to be, I was still younger, you know, I'm not going to be intimidated, and even though he's much older than me, I'm going to. But I couldn't just tell him, Mr. Blank, I needed to know his name. So before I went over to him, I stopped by some gentleman. I said, excuse me, what's his name? He said, oh, Mr. Goldberg? I said, well, yeah. He says, oh, do you know, he's amazing, isn't he? I said, amazing? That's not exactly how I would classify him. He says, yeah, do you know his story? I said, no. He says, oh, his wife had a stroke 2 years ago, and he takes care of her. And but he's able to get a neighbor to look in twice a day. So what does he do? For 20 minutes or 25 minutes, you would think a guy like that, those 25 minutes would run, take a walk, go to the gym, go to Starbucks. He doesn't. He takes those minutes and he runs to shul, puts on his talus to be able to say Kaddish or to listen to the Kaddish at the end of Shachris and for Ma'ariv. Isn't that amazing? And I said, that's really amazing. And I went back to my seat. Because Kanoyis is so often misplaced. And you know where we see it? In this week's Parsha. Pinchas was a Kanoi. You know who else was a Kanoi? Elijah the angel was a Kanoi. In the Haftarah, we find Elio, the other great Kanoi. He comes, the Malach comes to him and he says to the Malach, Kanoi kinesi l'Hashem elekei tzvakais. I was the great zealot. I've been exceedingly zealous for Hashem. He says it twice. And what does he get back in answer? He says, Elio, sorry. He says, you've lost your position. He says, you know what? Elisha ben Shaphat, Timshach l'Navi Acharecha, when you arrive, you shall anoint Elisha as the Navi in your place. Because the Kanoyas, the Mefarshim say, was misplaced, Elio's Kanoyas. So why was that? And they say because Pinchas was a Kanoi at the appropriate time. It was a doer of Yetzi Mitzrayim. It was just that perfect moment. He really genuinely felt that it was a right Kanoi. This isn't the time there was an evil King Ahav. He had an evil Queen Izebel. The nation was broken. It was shattered. It was confused. This was not the time for Kanois. This was a time of love. This was a time of understanding. This was a time of supporting people, of rupture, of fixing, of tying their wounds, healing their grief, binding their ruptures. So Eliyahu, the great Eliyahu, was not accepted his kanois. Pinchas was, and he was one of 600,000. So I suggest the next time you want to jump up and say, I'm a professional kanoi, there are entire yeshivas and meistis, and there are entire organizations, kehillas of kanoim. I say, and you know what? Perhaps a check of it would be. It says by Pinchas, the Kanoyas led to Brisi Shalom. His Kanoyas led to Shalom, to peace and harmony and bracha. And I ask you, when you see a Kanoy, is that Kanoyas really bringing to love and to Shalom, to peace? Or is it leading to acrimony and hatred and anger and vitriol and communities that fight and machlaikis? So when you see a Kanoi and you see that he's surrounded, he's waving a rusty sword and surrounded by people who look at him with anger and hatred, you say, you know what? I'm sorry. You're no Pinchas. You're the wrong type of Kanoi. And it's so relevant today. You know, we who live in America, we just had this week a very prominent, very outspoken, honestly quite disgusting individual get up and
call an entire nation of people rapists and druggies, right? And there's no muzzle on hatred and vitriol, and we have to be better than that. And just remember that there was one Pinchas out of 600,000. That's it. Only one person. Next week, we will have the honor of having the great Paisik from Eretz Yisrael, the Baal Mechaber, Minchas Usher, speaking about OCD in Halacha and the Kosher Switch. The following weeks, we will have the Rav Rabbi Foya, Priorities in Tzedakah. We will have the Rosh Hashiva, the Ram of Mir in Eretz Yisrael, Reb Nissen Kaplan, and we will additionally be having Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz. Number of fascinating topics. We'll be speaking about end of life, BRCA. We will speak about going to secular courts. We will be speaking about Dan's deals and selling tickets for mileage, right? We will be speaking about pictures of women in newspapers and their names on invitations. Why are we writing women out of Judaism? We will be having a bunch of fascinating topics. Fascinating. I would like to again say that we are having our raffle again tonight. If you send us an email to info@headlinesbook.com and you tell us which station you are listening to us on, we will pick two winners to this raffle and you will win $100 to your local book or Sfarim store of your choice. Again, all you have to do, because we are listened to on many stations, we like to keep a count of where. If you send a raffle to info@headlinesbook.com and we will announce the winners on the air next week, info@headlinesbook.com, which station you are listening to us on. You could be listening on to us at WMCA.com or WMCA 570, NachumSiegel.com. You could be listening to us on Edison. You could be listening to us in England, in Eretz Yisrael. You could be listening to us on the YeshivaNet. We like to keep track. You can win a book to his farm store. Thank you for listening. I look forward to speaking to you again next week with our amazing guests, Kultiv.